From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football.
That's right, baby.
Holy cow. I can't really sing.
No, I wouldn't say that. Don't say that. You got to have a growth mindset. I can't really sing yet.
Oh. Can you get better at that?
Yeah. That's practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suck at that. I'd love to be able to sing. I like being.
Are you
like
a shower singer?
Not usually, no.
Why not?
In the car, mostly. Like, I'll sing.
Just by yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
You won't sing around other people?
I will. I have.
Karaoke guy? No?
No. Hell no.
Scared of it?
I can't sing. Like, I don't want to. Like, do you ever, if you're in a karaoke bar.
Again, growth mindset.
Someone's
can't
terrible.
Sing.
Someone's yet. Terrible. It's kind of, the whole place has to listen to them. I don't want to be that person. Mm-hmm. Like, it's more about being considerate.
You
got to
adopt
others.
The wedding singer philosophy. Because I have a microphone and you don't. You will listen to every goddamn word I have to say.
I mean, I love being on stage. I love having a microphone. Right. I'm not, at current state, not an able singer.
Fair enough.
But like, if I have to give a speech or talk, like, I love that stuff. I love having the microphone in my hand. Like this. It's not in my hand, but I could put it in my hand. Yeah.
Yeah, true.
We have a comment from DBid1. Nice haircut.
I didn't. Oh, I trimmed my beard.
There you go.
Yeah.
I put the wrong one up. Sorry.
I like to call it mowing. I mowed the beard.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice haircut.
Yeah.
Mow in LA. Karaoke is like bowling. As long as everyone in the room sucks as much as you, it's fun.
That's a fair way to look at it.
Yeah. I'm pretty good at bowling.
Karaoke when everyone's good.
Yes.
Is honestly kind of obnoxious.
If you go to one in like Hollywood or whatever, and like everyone's like an actor, an actress, and then they all like are really good at it.
Yeah.
So that's good. Matthew says, good morning. Love you guys. Thank you, Matthew.
What a sweetheart.
He's the best. Yeah. So awesome. Go Wisconsin. Okay. Didn't do any of our. So this is our what week? What week are we in?
Week 10, baby.
Well, we're week 9 recap.
Week 9 recap, week 10 week.
Yeah, we'll be heading into week 10 as a week.
We're future focused here on this podcast, except for today.
Because we need to do that. So we have new rankings, new power rankings for both the mythical Pac-12, RIP, and the Big 10. We will recap all the games. There are 8 games we're going to get to. If you have questions for us, I don't think we have too many emails this week. Big10cast@gmail.com. And if you want to leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text, you can do that too, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at B1G Podcast and our favorite. So if you got Spotify, a lot of people listen to the podcast on Spotify. You can go to the Podcast of Champions and leave us a 5-star rating. So that's awesome. We would love that. We've been kind of traditional Apple people. So if you have the Apple podcasting app, I think it's the most popular podcasting app on your iPhone, your iPad, whatever it is. We already said that, iPods don't exist anymore.
Correct.
You can't leave a review there. But if you have one of those other things, what you can do is leave us a 5-star review. Tell us how terrible we are. As long as it's 5 stars, we don't care. You can say anything about us. We're ugly. We're terrible at our jobs. Our voices suck. Whatever you want to do, you can do that. But if you leave us 5 stars, we will read it on the podcast. And then each week on the recap show, we will give you free money for Trader Joe's because of John and Brea. $17 gift card to Trader Joe's, which is going to be upgraded now. And I don't know what we're going to do because we have a lot of gift cards. We have to figure some stuff out. But in honor, David, of Indiana putting up 31 points against Washington, we now will be sent 12 more $31 Trader Joe's gift cards. So we'll have to do some more giveaways. What's going on?
It's absurd.
It could have been. Indiana kind of screwed up. They could have scored more.
Yeah. I mean, they've been going 40 plus.
Yeah. So John Abrea sort of like hedged his bets a little. I don't know. He didn't hedge his bets, but he took a risk.
He's picking his spots well.
He took a risk. Yeah, well, actually, UCLA scored more than we thought.
Yeah.
For a $17 gift card. Indiana scored less. So he got off kind of easy with $31 gift cards.
Generous John.
Because of...
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Yeah. So
I realize what that's from. It's from Machete. Machete Kills.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I didn't even get the reference. I just thought it sounded cool.
I don't either.
But yeah, that's what it's from.
But we have new gift cards. I don't have them yet, but we'll have to do some other kind of giveaways and stuff too.
So we have some new reviews, but I have some real disturbing news.
Uh-oh.
One of them didn't follow the rules. One of them is a 4-star review. Sadly, we can't read that. Not on this air.
No.
So there are 3 reviews we can actually read. Look, there's
one. Who
would
leave a 4-star review? It's got to be 1 or 5.
There is one rule, everyone. It's a 5-star review. It can say the most vile things about us. Just needs to be 5 stars. All right? That's all we're asking for. All right. 3 5-star reviews. The first one is from Jazz App, I think. Lincoln Riley replacement. Should be mediocre, but is actually awesome, despite David and Ryan's lack of best effort. Ryan, after Riley gets fired or goes to be an NFL OC at the end of the season, I think the best option is obvious. Current OC at a blue blood program, reputation for innovative offenses, college and NFL head coaching experience, made it to a BCS championship game, did so well in his first year in the NFL, he took over roster control in year 2. This sounds great. Just wants to coach ball, will ignore the distractions of LA.
Yeah.
In many ways, intimately familiar with USC's biggest rival. And technically has experience recruiting SoCal. That's right.
Technically.
USC should hire Chip Kelly.
Yeah.
That's from Paul/Webfoot via his wife's Apple account.
Hey, Paul, thank you for doing that for me. Unfortunately, well, if you're a fan, if you want Lincoln Riley to be fired, like a lot of USC fans do, that ain't happening. Pete Thamel reported.
No, this is after he leaves, after he decides to go be an NFL OC.
I don't think he has the same sort of career aspirations that Chip Kelly did, where he would go leave a head coaching job to be an OC. But plus, with the contract he has, I think it would be silly. But yes, did you see Pete Thamel reported?
$90 million?
$90 million is what he would be owed. I was actually told Pete Thamel might have undershot it by a smidge. But that's it's a lot. It's more than Jimbo Fisher money. That's what we were told. And so, like, is that going to happen? No.
The reevaluation of Mike Bone as the USC AD is going to be really, really fun.
And you kind of go back and forth. Like, I don't think Jen Cohen, the current AD, is probably happy that she's like
saddled with a contract she can't get out of.
But if you were trying to hire, like, when is the last time? Just remember, like, Blue Bloods didn't take other Blue Blood coaches. So at the time, it made sense. And you probably had to, like, you know, do everything you could if you were trying to get him. And I think LSU probably the same thing when they were trying to get Brian Kelly.
I think it's if you can't put yourself in a position that you can't get out of. I think it's better to take a shot on how much did Oregon have to pay Dan Lanning to go hire him?
That's true. Yeah,
like it's better to take a shot on because your odds of failure in a new position, unless you're Nick Saban or Urban Meyer, they're still pretty high.
Yeah.
Like you can hit like just the right set of circumstances, and then those right set of circumstances don't display again. I mean, look at Chip Kelly. Like, right set of circumstances at Oregon, wrong set of circumstances at UCLA.
Yeah.
Same guy, but one successful, one isn't. Same deal. And so if you're invested, I mean, I think you could make a fair argument. No one should ever pay for a new coach anything more than like, I don't know, $6 million with a $20 million buyout, because you don't want to be stuck with a situation that doesn't work out. If you want to re-up your coach, if you want to retain them by giving them a huge buyout, that's one thing. But I wouldn't go acquire anything new for that amount of money. You don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah, ADs make bad decisions all the time. I mean, Oklahoma gets Brett Venables, right? And it was a more reasonable contract. Then they give him like a big extension, and they want him fired like months later. It's kind of crazy. Like this,
yeah.
No matter what happens, people make bad decisions.
Yeah. Bunch of stupid decisions. All right, we've got 2 more of these.
Okay,
this is from Bruin Kev. Hope springs eternal. Mm. I had spent a long time looking for a good podcast that provides insight, information, and analysis on my favorite Pac-12, now Big Ten teams. So imagine my delight when this podcast showed up on my search results. It's just like how Ryan expected USC to contend for the Big Ten title this year, or how David had no doubt that UCLA will finish Foster's first season with a respectable, successful 6-6 campaign. My hopes were riding high. But reality hit, just like pianos falling on their respective head coaches, and I'm left listening to Ryan extol the importance that Cam Rising attend media days, regardless of whether or not he will play a single game. Or I get to listen to Dave delve into deep analysis of preseason rankings and how important they are to college football. Additionally, Dave's consistent high praise for Charles Edward Kelly detracts from his accomplishments at UCLA and how he was so effective at recruiting at such a difficult place to recruit.
Yes.
I mean, these are both very valid viewpoints, and I agree 100% that Whittingham must not give away the competitive advantage of Cam Rising's playing status each week, even though we know he's out for the season now. But this is not hard-hitting, in-depth analysis that I had hoped for. Maybe one day these two clowns can get back to talking actual football, you know, the X's and O's. But at last, I'll be forced to keep listening until that happens, just like Dave is forced to keep covering UCLA football no matter how dreadful it gets. Who knows, maybe they'll surprise me one week and do something good, like barely beating an injured Rutgers team. Keep it mediocre. Go Bruins. Thank you, Bruin Kev.
Hey, Bruin Kev. That was good.
And this is from Eli in Detroit.
Okay.
The only solid execution coming out of LA right now. When I first found this podcast early this season, I thought Doug Marsh of Built to Spill hung up his guitar strap and joined the reincarnated, more nasally and bald ghost of Woodrow Wilson to go Beautiful Mind on CFB. JK, love the show. Every week is must listen. You really strike the right balance of barely engaged disillusionment, mostly accidental humor, and solid football analysis. Combine that with the nicest looking man, David, even dropping the occasional F-bomb, and I'm here for it.
Is that our winner?
I think that's our winner.
They're all good.
Those are all really good. We could have two winners. Yeah, I could give it to Paul Webfoot as well.
You want to do all three?
Sure. All three. All three of you get
Trojan Kev, you get it too?
Yeah.
I mean, all right. Kev.
If we read your review on this show, email us your address and we will.
Yeah. So email me, Ryan at USCFootball.com.
Yeah, because he doesn't check the other one until the day of the show.
Yeah. We do have some results from the Survivor Pool.
Mm.
The Week 9 results are in. So all three survived. So we're down to three. We're trying to get – so what we have now, we have a more expensive gift card. So the winner will get that. And the second, third place will give you the $17. So we'll give you the $31 if you win. Is that good?
Yeah.
That makes about sense. Okay. So – two people picked USC and one person picked Iowa to win. So, and for the losers, all three took Illinois and everyone survived. So in the notes, Matthew says all three remaining survivors made it through the week. First week with no eliminations. Griffin's 11-year-old smack talk of the week, quote, "I am so happy for my Trader Joe's gift card. Thanks. SC, please don't screw me over. Week 10, here I come." Way to go, 11-year-old Griffin.
I'm proud of 11-year-old Griffin.
Me too. You know, that's very cool that he's doing well and he's not going to share his gift card. Yeah, just go. So, Griffin, whatever you do, just go to Trader Joe's and let's buy crap tons of candy or whatever you want.
No. Yeah.
And eat it all for dinner one day.
Yeah, like just chocolate covered everything.
Yes. I would go pretzel. Okay. The chocolate covered pretzel is pretty legit. I mean, the peanut butter cups are amazing. Like, I don't know. If you're like dark chocolate,
where do you stand on like chocolate covered cranberries and like those sorts of things? Chocolate covered cherries, like all that sort of
not
stuff.
Not a big fan.
Not a big guy.
Yeah. Like, I think chocolate covered raisins aren't bad.
Mm.
But I haven't had those in a while. But I don't mix the fruit with that in that case.
I get it.
Are you into it? Or?
No, not really.
You know, it's like, okay. All right. So we did that. So we need to do our recap.
We got to recap some games.
I did the rankings this week. Dave made one adjustment that I like. So if you don't like our rankings, blame me or Dave. You can blame us both, whatever you want to do. Okay. So let's go through these. Week 9. What's going on, folks? We've got – oh, let me move this up here. We've got
– Purdue Boilermakers.
Number 18, they didn't move because they were on a bye. and they're still fairly terrible. Okay, let's go to our number 17 team. We've got
Northwestern Wildcats.
They're on the road taking on number 7.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Favorite one.
Do we have a quarterback controversy at Iowa?
Uh-oh.
That's a big question coming out of this one. Iowa blew out Northwestern 40-14, but this was not a blowout for a long time. And that long time coincided with Cade McNamara in there. Threw a terrible pick six at one point. I think he got dinged up, so I think that's the explanation for why Brendan Sullivan came in.
Yeah.
But the offense, I mean, his numbers don't look anything spectacular. He was 9 of 14 for 79 yards. He ran the ball. He ran 88 times for 41 yards. But the offense moved a lot better with him in there. I think him being a running threat allows Caleb Johnson a little bit more, you know, wide open lanes in the Northwestern running defense in this game. He had 14 carries for 109 yards and 3 touchdowns. A lot of that came after Sullivan came in and kind of allowed the offense to move a little bit more. I know our Iowa people have been kind of clamoring for this move basically since the preseason. But this was pretty good evidence that this might need to happen now.
Yeah.
We don't know if McNamara is extensively injured or if that was just kind of a pretext for this move. But going forward, and honestly, just to see what you have going into the offseason now, because I don't think anyone's, you know, screaming that, you know, it's McNamara or Sullivan. They're the answer in perpetuity. But see what you have on the roster so you see what you need to get in the portal. So give, you know, Brendan Sullivan the keys for the rest of this season, see what he can do. But what he did in this game against the Northwestern team that, I mean, they're 17th for a reason. We don't think they're any good, but
yeah,
at times they've looked alive in a way that like Purdue kind of hasn't, and, you know, UCLA, Rutgers notwithstanding hasn't. You know, Northwestern did go on the road and win a game by 27 points,
which is crazy to think, like, looking at this one.
Yeah. But for the most part, Iowa stifled them defensively, held them to 43 rushing yards, 120 passing yards, picked off Jack Lausch, who's been, I would say, generally pretty responsible with the ball, picked him off twice. So good showing from Iowa's defense. And I think once Sullivan came in, that offense looked like that better version of Iowa's offense we've seen this year, the one that can run the ball effectively. And I would say Sullivan's the answer going forward for them.
Yeah, the Iowa defense looked more like what we thought they would look like. 2 of 12 on third down for Northwest. I mean, they just couldn't keep drives going. Like they never were converting any third downs. And if you look at the first half, 3-0 Iowa after one.
Yeah.
Iowa scored 9 in the second quarter. Northwestern got a touchdown. It's 12-7 going into halftime. And then Iowa scores 20 points in the third quarter. It was like, what? Yes. So that was a very different sort of looking thing there. But I like the way the Iowa defense played in this one. Northwestern not very good, as we know. But I think that's, you want to see that. You want to see the defense kind of ball out. And then having a different option at quarterback, where if you're not going to be the most prolific passing offense in the world and you can run the ball a little bit and that frees up your run game for your, you know, stellar backs, I think that's a positive sign. So we'll see where Iowa goes from here. But you like to see Iowa scoring some points, and they did that in this one.
And they scored a safety.
That was in the second quarter, right?
Yeah. You like that.
Yeah.
When Iowa's not scoring safeties, defensive scores, like there's something wrong. So we like to see those.
Yeah, that 9 wasn't 3 field goals in the third quarter. It was, there was a touchdown and then safety.
Yes.
Which is
the non-traditional 9.
That's a more of the Iowa 9 is like that. Okay, we got number 16.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
They were on a bye.
Blessedly.
Blessed by, we got some news. I can't wait to tell everybody on Thursday where UCLA's going and what you're doing for that game.
Yeah, that's right, baby.
Number 15.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
Sorry, that's such a good one. So good. I sent Shane a message during the game that while I was covering, like every time I heard Scarlet Knights, this I heard this in the back.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
His wife and the little giggle and stuff. It's so funny. They were on the road taking on number 12.
USC Trojans.
My big takeaway from this one is that USC really dominated the game, and it probably could have been worse than this, 42-20. Pretty good beatdown of Rutgers.
Yeah.
Rutgers still had a chance to backdoor cover this one. Nothing was coming together. They really struggled to run the ball. And even with Ethan Calliope-Manis connecting with some stuff, I mean, it's so counterintuitive for Rutgers, but I thought they ran the ball 42 times. It should have been less because they had advantages on the outside, and they were just not taking advantage enough. Like, their matchups on the outside, it felt like USC's corners were playing 15 yards off at all times, there were just easy first downs out there, and they just kept slamming the ball into the line of scrimmage over and over and over again. And I know that's identity football, and Rutgers doesn't want to get too far away from its identity, but that's 2 weeks in a row where I would say their best advantage, and this is a crazy thing to have said about Ethan Calliope-Manis as much as like 3 weeks ago, but their best advantage has been throwing it outside to their receivers. And even with Ian Strong out in this game, they had advantages out there. Their deep balls, they just couldn't connect on them enough.
The middle ones, they were just, the guys were wide open and he couldn't hit them, but he was doing really good job hitting the sideline guys.
Yes. Dymier Miller, I mean, he was getting open a lot over the middle too. And if Calliope-Manis hits a couple more of those, it's a bit different game. I just thought USC was just fundamentally better, and Rutgers' defense in this game was abysmal. What they were trying to do covering Mekhi Lemon, they really need to go back to the drawing board on that because he's really good, but a lot of receivers are going to be able to do that against them if they cover like that. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't stop the run. Woody Marks was not as exceptional as he's been, but he was pretty darn good. And then Miller Moss was just kind of, I mean, he was just tossing it back there. Like, it wasn't under severe pressure really much, was able to find open receivers just constantly. Like, just a constant loop, and it would be these big, explosive plays where just nobody was even in position to tackle. And then there was that huge kick return, I think, also for Lemon, where he got it down. Was it inside the 10?
It was like an 80-yard return.
And it's just there were just too many of these just absolute busts. And, again, going back to identity football, okay, if your identity is run the ball and play defense, you can't – and I know they're super injured, and I don't want to, like, knock it too hard, but just the fundamental execution of being in place to make plays – what's going on? And I know Greg Schiano personally handles special teams. Like, what's happening that there's that big of a bust on a... Because it was everyone got shunted to the left side. And so Lemon has basically just does one cutback at the beginning and it's gone. Yeah. Like, there's... And it was basically the kicker essentially like running ahead of him that kept that from being a touchdown, which was a really interesting strategy. I was expecting him to turn around at some point and try to tackle him. Never does. But he like keeps pace. He's like a pace car, and it makes him slow down a little bit, and that's able let some people get back and tackle him. But just their fundamental execution, I thought, was poor, and that speaks to maybe these backups are not getting coached up enough or whatever it is. But just the tackling and positioning on tackling was so poor in this game.
Yeah, this was a Friday nighter. It was kind of crazy being in the press box because the Laker game was going on. And then the World Series was going on. The World Series goes to extra innings, so they put this game on FS1. So late arriving crowd, I would say. Like, it got okay later, but at kickoff, I tweeted out a picture, and people, like, they're still tweeting about it this morning, talking about that, 3 days later. Both teams were banged up a lot. USC, I think Rutgers did need to throw the ball more. Now, USC has been one of the worst teams at generating sacks. Rutgers has been very good at protecting the quarterback, but USC got 4 sacks in this game, so by far the most they've had all season. But I still think the advantages, like you said, David, were throwing the ball to the outside. There were some middle deep shots open. They connected on one, And the other ones were just like way over the dude's head. It just wasn't.
Yeah, he doesn't. Those are.
There was no touch.
His issue is touch. He finally had a really good one. Like there was one a good where he showed
in the third quarter.
Really nice touch. But he was trying to place it perfectly. And the broadcast kept saying, and I agreed, you don't have to be perfect. Just air it out. Like just put some air under it and toss it out to the open side of the field and let him run under it.
When you're in the press box, we're up high watching it, and you can kind of see like, oh, that dude's wide open. And if the pass is sort of like if it's got some arc to it, you know, like if you're playing cornhole or something, you see the people that just throw these BBs, you could tell right away, like, there's no way that dude's catching up. It's just like, ooh, it's gonna go flying over his head, and you're like, man, what's going on there? But I thought the passing game for Rutgers was the most effective part. Kyle Manunga gets banged up a little bit again, like he did last week against UCLA. Left the game, I believe, in the third quarter.
And he probably should have been out before that. I mean,
he had a couple concussions, took
two big headshots. Yeah. And he took two big ones on that same play. Like, he had the one on the initial contact, and then he hit his head really hard on the ground. So, yeah, I mean, he probably should have been out of that game earlier.
His backup was out also. I mean, a lot of USC was down four of their secondary starters. So that's why, like, if you're Rutgers, like, hey, throw the ball a little bit more. But Mekhi Lemon was the kind of star for USC. He had over 224 yards of total offense. They replaced. So Zachariah Branch had been the kickoff returner and the punt returner and just hadn't been doing much. And they put him in, and his second return, he breaks that big one. So they needed to get, you know, both teams were on a three-game losing streak. USC needed to get something going. They did. We'll see. No turnovers. I thought it was a fairly clean game overall to be played there. I know it's kind of funny to have, like, Yankees, Dodgers, and USC Rutgers, like New York football and New York baseball on the same night there. But
it's never good when one team has more yards than the other team and they ran 31 fewer plays.
Yeah, USC didn't have to run a lot of plays. It was pretty
well, it was just explosive after explosive after explosive, constant.
Yeah. Some of that. So yeah, Moss threw for over 300. Woody Marks had three touchdowns. I think he had 94 yards. But they I think UCLA had some success throwing the ball to backs out of the backfield, and USC did that a little bit too.
Yep.
But it's a tough one for Rutgers. I mean, it's very banged up, but you got to try to get something that, you know, no one expected this one to be. I mean, they kicked off at 11 p.m. their time, you know. That's a tough one coming off the tough loss to
I didn't UCLA. See any real lag for them until the deep into the fourth, when it seemed like the offensive line in particular got a little bit, it looked like they got sluggish.
Yeah.
At the end of the game.
And by then it was like 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's tough.
They did come out on Wednesday. So that was.
Yeah, but there's no preparing for staying up that late. Like, unless you're like literally coming out 3 weeks beforehand. Like, that's. Giving them that kick was insane. Like, I don't know how you don't. Bad. I mean, I know it's LA.
We pointed that from the beginning.
I know it's LA, but like that. You just kick it at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, putting them so that they have to be body clock 2 a.m. and still playing competitive snaps that's rough.
By the way, we haven't mentioned our picks because they were terrible. We were both 3-5. We did two picks differently. We split those and stuff. But so for the game so far, did we get anything right? No, we had which games did we talk about?
We had Iowa right.
Yeah, we had Iowa, Northwestern. We got that one right. Did you USC?
No, we both had Rutgers.
We both took Rutgers 14.5. They looked like they could have covered, but they did not. This was one we split on. We have number 14.
Maryland Terrapins. Snap, snap,
snap, snap, snap. And this is crazy, but we got them all the way up at number 5.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
You want to know why? Because Minnesota murdered Maryland.
Yeah. I got this one right.
And the final score is almost deceptive because it was 48-10. Finished 48-23 with some junk time stuff from MJ Morris. But
Minnesota's won three in a row. So Minnesota's kind of why I put them up there. They're like on a good winning streak.
Yeah. And like, I guess I'm just like hangover from them struggling to beat UCLA. And, you know, that was UCLA almost and probably should have won that game. But Minnesota in this game was, Max Brosmer was awesome
yeah.
in this game. Just accurate throwing the football. Even the incompletions looked fine. Like, you know, looked like he knew what he was doing. But just the decision making, he was excellent in this game. And the run game, I thought, came together. You know, Darius Taylor had a good game. He had one really good run, essentially, 51 yarder. But, you know, Daniel Jackson is probably, again, the most unsung receiver in the Big Ten, was awesome again. And defensively, just absolutely shut this team down. First, forced Billy Edwards into mistakes when he has not been a mistake-prone quarterback this year, and kept him pretty stifled in the run game. And that's been a little bit of the bugaboo for Minnesota this year, is allowing too much on the ground, but they didn't in this one. And their pass defense, which has been excellent, continued to be excellent until, again, the waning moments when it didn't really matter anymore. Really good performance from Minnesota. I think, you know, if we're doing bowl look-ahead projection stuff, this was a huge win for them. And now they've just got to pick up one of at Illinois, at Rutgers, Penn State at home, at Wisconsin. There's at least one win there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at Rutgers, probably the one you circle, but I think they'll be competitive with Illinois, and I think they have a chance to be competitive with Wisconsin. Penn State might be tough, but 7-5's out there. Like, they can do that. And that's a great place to be after, you know, kind of the disappointment through five games, where they felt like they were on the wrong side of a couple of coin flips and maybe a bad call in the Michigan game, to now be in position where a bowl game seems pretty damn likely.
It does. Minnesota was favored by 4. I just said I'd seen both these teams beat USC. I just was way more impressed with Minnesota than Maryland. I searched in the chat had put up earlier that where did he say? Oh, I'm okay living in a world where USC ends up being Maryland's only conference win. Yeah, it's making the USC loss to Maryland look even worse at this point. But I just thought Minnesota looked a lot better, and they were in this game, as you saw. I mean, to be able to convert 9 of 13 on third down is pretty impressive.
That's just great quarterback play.
Yeah, a couple of interceptions. And again, like I saw in the USC game, Maryland scores a couple late touchdowns, but it wasn't to, like, go ahead and win the game. It was to try to make it, like, somewhat respectable, even though it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it closed as a 5-point spread in favor of Minnesota.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they won by 25. Like that.
And it was more, essentially.
Yeah, it was not close at any point. Really impressive game from Minnesota. They're definitely upper half now in the Big Ten.
Yeah. Matthew in the chat. Matthew's like a big fan. He knows everything that's going on here. We should have him as a guest. Coy Parrish, the safety who had game-winning pick against SC, is a true freshman star. So he had another pick in this game.
He's an absolute stud.
Yeah. So good. Do you think that Minnesota should be number 5? Like, it's.
I mean, it's fair. The thing is, there is a drop off after the top 4.
Right. There was a tier. This is, second tier. This is where
we anticipated that preseason. We just had a different team as the 4th. I mean, it's Indiana instead of Michigan, but there's a drop off after 4. But yeah, why not Minnesota there? I mean, who else are you going to put there? Illinois, Iowa, Michigan, Wisconsin?
Yeah.
No, why not Minnesota?
Minnesota went on that stretch of, I think, 7 straight games of not beating an FBS squad, but to win your last 3 Big Ten games.
Bad call on an onside kick and missed field goal against North Carolina. Either of those go differently, they might be a 1-loss team right now. And yes, there's the UCLA game where if Deshaun Foster makes a better 4th down call, maybe they lose that one. But they're not that far off from a team that has a decently gaudy record right now.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to, we have number 13.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Taking on number 9.
Michigan Wolverines.
This was, I think, kind of agonizing for Michigan State.
Oh, my God, yes.
Michigan won 24-17. It was a really close game. Like, it was really closely played, but Michigan State just had mistakes, flubs, missed a field goal after driving it down to, I think it was the 2. Then they get a delay of game because they don't get the play in on time. On the 2, and they were going to go for a 4th down to try to score a touchdown on the initial drive. So then they're forced to kick a field goal, which they miss from the 7-yard line on the opening drive. And then just before half, Aiden Chiles, and there's no reason to be doing this. It's like the Michigan State 20, they're on the Michigan State 39 with 14 seconds left in the game, and he's running around out there, gets strip fumbled. Michigan turns that into a field goal.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's a swing right there. That's 6 points that just, ugh, how does that happen? Just there was a lot of that just kind of agonizing stuff in this game. Now, give Michigan credit. They called a creative offensive game. I mean, when you say Donovan Edwards had a passing touchdown in this game, I mean, they were doing some things because they are desperate to try to find some offense, and they were able to do some things, especially in the second half of this one. Considering Michigan State's run defense has been so good, they had to kind of get creative. Alex Orji came in as kind of their running quarterback, essentially playing some wildcat. But man, just I thought just a lot of agonizing mistakes for Michigan State. This was a very winnable game for them, and they just came up short because of kind of the bugaboo that's been there all season. You know, Aiden Chiles not there yet. You know, he's just not quite fully cooked, not quite fully baked, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And so once again, a kind of crippling turnover from him. But it wasn't the only thing. It's just it was so costly given the point in the game. And luckily it didn't turn into a touchdown, but just it gives Michigan that lead going into halftime, and it just gives them a different feel to this game heading into the second half.
This was tough. We had, what was the spread here? We had -5. So we took Michigan State plus the 5. Michigan State looked in control. We both got this wrong. That's 7-0, and you just feel like, okay, Michigan can't do a whole lot. Michigan State, do your thing. You know, they outgained Michigan 352 yards to 265. They were, both teams were good on third down. It just, Michigan State made those mistakes. And that middle eight was a killer, where you're up 7-0, allowing the Michigan touchdown. Was it a missed extra point or something? I think it was like 7-6.
Yeah.
You get the ball back and maybe try to like put a drive together or just go to halftime. I think there was like half a minute left or something like that.
It was a 2-point conversion, I think, that failed.
Oh, they got one for two. Okay. Child's terrible fumble, and then Michigan gets a gift field goal and then takes the opening kickoff. It might have taken, I think it was 5-minute drive or something, but you score on that one. And all of a sudden, you're like, wow, it's now 16-7, and it was 7-0. And it just seemed like in the, you know, eight minutes of game time, Michigan just kind of took control of the game. And Michigan State deserved better in this one, but it's just those mistakes, I think, really, I think really hurt them. It's one of those things where Child's like, hey, he can be good, or, that turnover was a killer one, I think, in this one.
I think anyone who watches Aiden Chiles can see the obvious talent. Like, they can see he's a big athletic guy who's got a really strong arm. He can make throws, the whole thing. It's just, you're giving him a lot of reps right now, and you got to hope it's developmental reps, that he's going to be a lot better next year. Because this one, I mean, also he looked kind of flustered at the end of this game. Like, just throwing a lot of incomplete passes. Maybe they could have tried to throw it a little bit more early, get him in more of a rhythm. But that run game has been so good, and they've been so solid, that I understand why they didn't. But they had some advantages. I know Michigan was missing, I think, their best defensive secondary player. So, you know, maybe air it out a little bit more early, but I don't know. I don't really have too much objection to the offensive game plan. It's really just the mistakes. And, you know, I'm not a big player execution guy, but like the delay a game and then you have to kick a field goal, then you miss the field goal, then the fumble. I mean, it's just, come on, man.
If I would have told you that Michigan State had the ball for 37 minutes and Michigan 23, would you be like, okay, well, it's a blowout, right? Like, not Michigan winning.
Well, yeah,
winning.
I mean, look, the underlying stats, I wouldn't say, like, because Michigan ran far fewer plays. Like, I thought it was a pretty even game. It's not like Michigan rolled over in this one. They had a game plan to win it. It's just Michigan State also did, and Michigan State just made more mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, I think this felt more like a 3-point game, a 1-point game. And it could have gone either way. It's just, this never should have been 24-10 Michigan in the fourth quarter,
right?
Which is what it was.
Yeah.
So That's the disappointing part. Not that it was a Michigan win, because they played well enough and they did some cool stuff in the second half to try to make some offense. And I think that's a credit to Shrone Moore. That's a credit to the staff. Recognizing, I mean, they've tried so many
Michigan
different
ran a
things.
Bunch of trick plays.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, what is going on here?
Flicker
and like.
They're not too proud to try stuff, which is good to see from a proud program. Like, look, man, we're not able to get anything from the quarterback position. We're not able to consistently do this. So let's try some other stuff. Let's try some weird stuff. Let's try again back to the same quarterback we started the season with and see if that guy works now. I mean, they've tried three different quarterbacks. I mean, look, I think if you're a Michigan fan, you can have a lot of criticisms for Shrone Moore. You can have a lot of criticisms for, you know, what the rebound from last year's team has been like. But you can't knock them for not trying.
Yeah. I mean,
they're trying some stuff. Yeah. And in this game, it worked.
So Davis Warren gets a start. Alex Orji, I think in his longest run of the season, he came in and did he get a touchdown run? Was that it? Orji.
Orji had a touchdown.
Yeah, he had a touchdown run. I think it was his first touchdown of the season. That was what it was. But and we've heard from Shrone Moore since. It seems like Davis Warren's going to be the guy going forward. If you remember, in the beginning of the season, he threw those picks, and so they benched him and goes to Orji. Then it was very one-dimensional.
If I was Shrone Moore, I wouldn't marry myself to anybody at this point. It would just be, yeah, he played well. We're going to roll with him next week and see how he plays.
It could be like a bullpen game. Like, you're just like, oh, which arm are we going to throw out there in this one?
Yeah, and I think it's just reality. Like, they've got some imperfect options at quarterback, and that needs to be corrected this offseason in the transfer portal. And they'll do it, but it's... That's the pressing concern for this team, and they'll have options. I mean, there's a lot of guys who'd love to play at Michigan, so it's just kind of a one-season blip where they've got no good options.
All right, let's go to number 11.
Washington Huskies.
They were on the road taking on now number 2.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
The killer Cignetti.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Indiana won this in a kind of different way than they've been winning games this year. This was much more of a defensive win. They had a defensive score, which proved pretty critical. Indiana won 31-17. Indiana won 31-17, but this was not the Indiana blowouts that we've been seeing. They won by 14, but this, if you look at the post-game win expectancy, this was more of a 7-point game than the 14-point win. And you can point to that pick six as like, that was what did it.
Yeah.
That was the cover, and it was early, but that was what did it. Indiana clearly, I would say, is not quite as comfortable with Taven Jackson at quarterback as Curtis Rourke, and that's no surprise. They gave him a lot more short stuff to do. They gave him a little bit less of the like broad-based decision-making that Curtis Rourke has. And it worked effectively enough. He was not Curtis Rourke out there, but he also wasn't what he was last year for Indiana. He was the better version of that. And they were able to run him again, which is something they can't do with Curtis Rourke as much. And they ran the ball well. Justice Ellison kind of shouldered the load for this offense, which needed the running game to show up, and the running game showed up. And that was huge. On Washington's side, it was, you know, a couple mistakes from Will Rogers.
Yeah.
But otherwise, this was a good enough performance. Like, it should have been good enough for a closer game. And I think, you know, they did some nice things with DeMond Williams. He had the touchdown run. I know Jonah Coleman's a little dinged up, but once again, I just walk away from a game saying, man, it would be nice to run him 25 times. If you could just find a way to get 6 more carries out of him in this one. He had 19 for 104 yards. Once again, I just kind of walk away from a Washington game saying they're not that far away.
Yeah.
They're close-ish, but it's just still too many mistakes. And, you know, how much of that is just a team full of transfers who aren't yet used to each other still, you know, and haven't yet developed that full rhythm? I don't know. But Indiana won again. They won by 14.
That's what they do.
Amazingly and bizarrely, they're still only 13th. I don't understand.
Really?
In the AP poll, people are not watching the games, I guess. They're 8-0, beating everybody that comes to them by double digits. and they're doing it now with a backup quarterback. Now, hopefully Curtis Rourke is back this week. Yeah. Apparently he has a good chance to be. But Indiana is like the story of college football this year, and they should be a top 10 team right now.
I agree with you there. The way, you know, we weren't sure what, you know, how Jackson was going to do. Only 124 passing yards, so it's going to be a different sort of game. But it's one of those times when it's a different sort of game. Washington had a chance to sort of take, I don't want to say take control, but just really get things going early in the game. Washington gets the opening kick. I think he got sacked once and they ended up going three and out. But Indiana goes three and out. And Washington gets the ball, pretty good field position, and they're moving it. And then you're like, okay, if this good Washington defense, especially very good pass defense for Washington, can do well against the backup quarterback for Indiana, and you're moving the ball, you're running it with Jonah Coleman, and that pick six was an absolute killer because it looked like Washington was going to go in. The crowd was going crazy. Yeah. It was game day, and that just – it's sort of like
deflating and inflating. Like it's suddenly the crowd is bonkers again after they just watched you drive down the field.
Yeah.
Yeah. A first quarter play rarely is like, oh, wow, that was the big play. But the first quarter play was the big play in this game. Like, yeah. I think it just changed what could have been a bad tone to the start the game. Like if Washington goes up 7-0, suddenly there's a lot of pressure on Taven Jackson. Suddenly, you know, and say they go three and out again, then Washington goes down and scores again. Does it start getting tilted a little bit, pass instead of run? Does he make more mistakes? Do they have to try some more stuff downfield? All that kind of stuff. But like, this is a game plan. They didn't even have to involve Elijah Surratt at all, really, because they could keep it all, you know, 10 yards or less downfield,
yeah,
run the ball, and control the clock that way. And so much of it was that early defensive score.
Yeah, that really was like, oh, boy. But when you just watching it, you're like, okay, this is going to be really tough for Indiana to cover here. But that's what they do. And I think really good teams can win different ways.
You want to know why?
He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
That's why.
Yeah. Pretty ridiculous. So yeah. If they get Rourke back, I mean, this is a fun team to watch, and they should definitely be in the top 10. I don't know why they're not, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's go to our next game. We have number 10.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
They were at number 3.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
Another game where, like, the number one word I can think of is agonizing.
Yeah, Nebraska could have won this one.
Yeah. I mean, I won't say should have. If you look at post-game win expectancy, Ohio State should have won this by about 20. but they won 21-17 and had to score in the fourth quarter to retake the lead. Nebraska played a really good defensive game.
Yeah.
And I thought Ohio State, and this is not just me being a Chip Kelly hater, but it is at some level, called a really shitty game. They're banged up on the offensive line. Their left tackle went down. Their backup left tackle actually went down at the end of this game. We'll see on him. But they're playing with their backup at left tackle. They've got some offensive line issues. And they can't run the ball. They couldn't run the ball in this game, and that defensive front for Nebraska has been hit or miss. Like, they've been kind of wildly oscillating this year, they were hit in this game. And I don't think they threw the ball anywhere near enough with Will Howard, and they were running it way too much with guys who were just not breaking anything big. And, you know, it's a crazy thing to say about Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, because they've both been, you know, excellent this year.
They had like 25 yards rushing each or something.
Yeah. I mean, it was a miserable offensive day running the ball. And that's what you hire Chip Kelly to do, is be able to run the ball even in disadvantageous situations. They weren't able to. And then probably didn't throw it enough with Will Howard. I thought they had opportunities. I mean, he was hitting some shots. Carnell Tate, Jeremiah Smith both caught deep ones, and he probably could have thrown some more. I just don't think they called it enough. Something Ohio State fans maybe will learn about Chip Kelly is he does not like to throw to outside receivers. Generally speaking, he's trying to keep it between the hashes to the tight ends. And he's been a little bit different this year. Maybe that's Ryan Day's influence, but an offense that like this was a defensive game plan, an offensive game plan that demanded them throwing the ball downfield more. And he's just not, that's not what he loves to do. That's not his experimentation. That's not what Professor Chip likes to cook up in his lab. And that's all that matters is his lab and what he likes to cook up. This game was won defensively for Ohio State. Nebraska, even with kind of a lot of failures for Ohio State on offense, Nebraska really struggled to do a whole lot in this game. I think there's a big freshman wall thing happening with Dylan Raiola right now. He had the horrible game against Indiana. This was not as bad, but I think it's because they took away a lot of what he was, a lot of what they were asking him to do. They dialed it back. This looked more like the game plan that Indiana gave Taven Jackson. Like, try to keep things in front of the safeties. Don't try to make too many crazy decisions. We're going to keep your depth of target pretty low. We're not going to ask you to do too much downfield. And they managed him well, but it wasn't enough to put together too many scoring drives. And then he had the crippling pick at the end, which showed you why they were trying to manage him all game.
Yeah, they don't want to see that.
Nebraska had the ball late. That's all you can ask is that they had the ball with a chance to score. And what you point to is we had a true freshman quarterback on the road in Columbus trying to beat the number four team. And he proved to be a true freshman quarterback on the road in Columbus trying to beat the number four team in the country. That shit happens. But I think if you're a Nebraska fan, look, there's on the one hand, you haven't won a close game in forever. You haven't beaten a top 25 team in forever. On the other hand, you went into Columbus against the number four team and you did it with a true freshman quarterback. And it's agonizing that you didn't win and you were 25 and a half point dogs. You got to hold both of those thoughts in your mind at once.
Yeah.
And yes, you don't want to be the moral victory type. And I get that. But at the same time, you got to look at this and say, this isn't the same as the crap we've been experiencing the last 7 years or whatever it is. This is different. Like, it's better. And I think that's going to show out over the final third of the season. But obviously a disappointing result for Nebraska. And I think if one team has more questions coming out of this one, it's Ohio State. How are they going to create a running game when they've got a beaten up offensive line and they don't have a left tackle? What's going to happen? And they got to go back to the drawing board on that.
Yeah, there's one of the cases where both teams are not feeling really good after this game. You took the points, so you got this one right, and I got it wrong. It was very frustrating to see the fact that Ohio State couldn't run the ball. They weren't able to sustain drives. It was like big play or bust. They've got those great wide receivers, but somehow they couldn't keep the drives moving. They were 1 of 10 on third down. Can you imagine? Like, they just couldn't keep drives going, and it was really frustrating to see, you know, what they were doing there. As far as the passing game going, I mean, Ohio State's defense was really impressive. Raiola had 4.6 yards per attempt. Like, that's pretty horrible on 33 passes.
Yeah.
Ohio State only threw it 16 times, which is nuts, but they averaged, you know, almost 14 yards per passing attempt. But not being able to convert on third downs, not being able to run the ball, they weren't able to, it just was going to make this a close game the entire time. And Nebraska sticks around, and heck, they had a lead in the fourth quarter, which is, you know, absolutely insane. It should not have been this close. Nebraska controlled the clock. It's just one of those things where you have to be concerned if you're Ohio State. Like you mentioned, the offensive line, this defense can kind of do some good things, but I think they have way too much talent on the offensive side to struggle like this. I mean, Nebraska's defense good, but
well, and I don't mean to like talk too crazy about it, but I mean, they've played four teams in a row now with like decent-ish defenses, and they haven't scored over 40 on any of them. And I know that's kind of a crazy benchmark, but if you're talking about this as like a playoff contender, I mean, they scored 38 against Michigan State, 35 against Iowa, 31 against Oregon, 21 against Nebraska. At least one of those, they should have just smoked them.
Yeah.
Oregon, I mean, we'll get to Oregon, but like, you know, when they're beating teams, they're
beating them.
Yeah, they're smoking a little bit. And yeah, okay, same kind of deal. But I mean, 35-0 over Purdue has a different smell to it.
Mark says Ohio State had something like 45 plays. It was 47, but it's not because, you know, it wasn't because they were scoring like 80-yard touchdowns. It was they were 1 of 10 on third down. They were getting put off the field a lot. You know, I think 1 of 4 on fourth down. I mean, 1 of 2 on fourth down.
I mean, a lot of that's just Chip Kelly-isms, you know, lining up on a short conversion with your quarterback in the shotgun, and he's a big guy who can run. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing, homie?
I think it's definitely concerning. I mean, you can forgive the Oregon loss on the road, but you wanted to see a bounce back after a bye week, and just that's what I thought Ohio State would do. Just take control of this game. Nebraska just got beat by 7 touchdowns, and you need to come back in the fourth quarter to win. I mean,
Ohio State's defense is the elite part of that team, and it's kind of crazy with the offensive talent that Ohio State has.
Okay, let's move on. We have 2 more left. We got number 8.
Wisconsin Badgers.
And they were taking on hosting number 4.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. This was, I would say, the most impressive win for Penn State this year. Given what they were dealing with, especially in the second half, and given what Wisconsin, you know, punched them, and it was one of those games where it was like everything's just kind of going wrong. Everything's just not quite working out. There was this insane drop by Fleming at one point where they were going to convert for a new first down inside the red zone, and he just drops it wide open. And it's just like, oh, is this going to be one of those games where just catastrophe happens? And it kind of looked that way. Drew Aller goes down. Wisconsin's up 10-7. And it looks like this could be trending really poorly, and Wisconsin absolutely could win this game. But the defense kind of steps up. I think there was an element here where the moment got a little bit big for Braden Locke. I think this was another game where you saw a relatively new quarterback, his eyes get a little bit too big and the moment getting a little bit large, because he threw one of the worst pick sixes I've seen since Dante Moore last year for UCLA, or Dorian Thompson-Robinson first couple years at UCLA. And I know these are UCLA references for people who probably haven't watched a lot of UCLA, but it was a bad pick six. He doesn't see a dropping linebacker and just tosses it right to him.
Yeah.
And the guy just runs it in. But when you're watching Braden Locke's body language that entire second half, he looked like kind of frustrated and confused, and you don't want your quarterback looking like that. You want him to look composed and measured, like, crap, I messed that one up. That's on me. But it looked like he didn't even really know what went wrong.
Yeah.
You're analyzing a lot from body language, but that strikes me as another guy kind of hitting a little bit of a wall. And then there were multiple times in the second half where he just seemed like there was a miscommunication with his receiver, where the ball would be way behind a guy running on a little drag across the middle. And it's like, did you throw that wrong? Did he get the wrong route? Did you have the wrong route? What happened there? And that happened a few times where it was just like, And some of that, I think you have to point to Penn State's defense, which has been pretty nails all year, confusing him and keeping him from doing some of the stuff he's been able to do. And it's not as if this is a Wisconsin team that's been awesome throwing the ball, but they've done enough in the passing game to keep the pressure off that run, that great rushing attack. But this game, the balance was different.
Yeah, 22 of 42. That's not good.
Yeah, and Penn State's rush defense was largely able to stifle Wisconsin's rushing attack. So anyway, it goes pick six at that point, and so it's 14-10 Penn State. But at that point, Drew Aller then comes out of the game with a leg injury, and they have to bring in their backup, Bo Prabula, who has mostly been a runner this year. As the backup, he's been the backup for Aller forever, but
he was efficient.
But he comes in,
yeah,
and frankly, the whole damn thing runs a whole lot better. And I'm not saying he should start over Aller, but his mobility, like he was doing these dinky little rollouts to the left where he would find like just the dragging tight end or the dragging receiver, whoever it was, and would just toss it to him for a first down. Like they converted, I think, 2 or 3 third and 4s just that way, just a little rollout. Dump it off, and it made it look so easy. And, you know, at times Penn State's offense just looks like things are difficult. Yeah. And I think some of it is maybe
– it was like the easy button.
Kotelnicki's more of a – I mean, he comes from a program where he was working with mobile quarterbacks, and not that Aller's immobile, But I think he can do a little bit more with Prabula, rolling him out, moving him around. And I think it unlocks some things for him offensively. And it was also that Wisconsin wasn't, I think, really prepared for him being more than a package guy. So he comes in, he leads a couple of touchdown drives. And meanwhile, the defense just completely stones Wisconsin the rest of the way. Really, really impressive second half. I think their confidence now, even with Aller potentially dinged up heading into next week against Ohio State, their confidence has to be sky high after going into a hostile Camp Randall environment against a surging Wisconsin team, shutting them down, and being able to do that with a backup quarterback.
It was pretty impressive. We both took Wisconsin plus 6.5, and it, certainly early, like most of these games, it looks like, oh, our pick's going to be pretty good. But after halftime, Drew Aller came out in that knee brace, and you, like you said, the Penn State offense just seemed to work better for whatever reason. That Locke's pick six was so bad, and it was just similar to in the Indiana Washington game. You just kind of felt at that point like, Wisconsin's not going to keep this one close, and that was a bad one. But that's, you know, that's a big shift, right? It was 10-7, I believe, and now it's 14-10. And if you watched Wisconsin from that point on, every freaking drive, it was 2nd and 12 or 2nd and 11. There was a tackle for a loss, I think, every single time Wisconsin tried to run the ball in the second half to start a drive. And it was just the Penn State, tackle for a loss. So impressive. And that's, I think, when you're an offensive team that's struggling a little bit. And like I said, they missed 20 incompletions or whatever in this game. It's just when you couldn't get the run game going in the second half, it just, Penn State was able to just do exactly what they wanted to do. And their offense got, more efficient, to be honest, in the second half too. But that was tough to see this proud Wisconsin team. Penn State just came after him. Just the number of I got to look at the number of tackles for a loss in the second half. It was impressive, and it just put them behind the sticks on every drive. And so that was really tough. And Wisconsin just couldn't recover from that. Even though the environment was great, I mean, people were into it.
All of the momentum was on Wisconsin's side. And yes, Braden Locke's pick six took a lot of that wind out of the sails, but it's not as if they just like rolled over at that point.
And no, they still
fought. The pressure could have still been on them, but Bo Prabula, that offense, and then that defense just stoning them over and over and over again. Just just a really, really impressive outing for Penn State.
Yeah. If you're like, when you're looking, we're looking from our point of view, you're like, okay, we just need Wisconsin to like score here and make it close and, cover the spread.
And just no.
It was just every time you're like, how are we 2nd and 12 again? Like, what happened?
No point in that second half did I feel like Wisconsin was going to end up covering.
No,
because it was just Penn State all the way.
Yeah. So really impressive. Like you said, I think the most impressive win so far for Penn State to get this one on the road. It was, at USC, they came back from 14 down. This was sort of one, though, where it was like USC wasn't playing great. And Wisconsin, I think, has been playing really good. And then to be able to get this win in a, two touchdown win.
Well, and they want it, that's the thing, is they want it with identity. They want it with this is how we're going to play. This is how we play. And they were able to dominate.
All right. We got one last one. Number six.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Take it on the number one team.
Oregon Ducks.
All right, this is one where I got to start recalibrating my Oregon stuff, because I think I got a little thrown by their opening couple of games of the season, and it's kind of just sitting in the back of my mind. But
with the point shaving and all that?
Well, yeah, and just like some of the stuff where they didn't look quite right, but they're looking so quite right now that...
Yeah.
Got to start getting back to where I was preseason on Oregon, being like, no, they're a legit top two, top three team.
Yeah.
And yes, they're number one right now, but you know what I mean. Blew out Illinois 38-9, was never close. This game was over at halftime. You can point to some things on the Illinois side, but their defense just rolled over and died. Dylan Gabriel was hitting everything, hitting some screens, hitting some deeper shots. But he looked excellent. He looked like a Heisman contender. They ran the ball all over him, 229 yards on the ground. Really balanced day again for Oregon. And this Illinois defense has shown some stuff at times. Yes, they gave up 49 points to Purdue the other week, but They've shown some stuff at times, and last week they were pretty damn good against Michigan. This week they were not, and a huge part of that was Oregon's really good now. You know, I think they're up to number two in the SP Plus offensively now. They've really hit their stride. Dylan Gabriel looks, again, like he's going to be hanging out in New York. And, you know, for Illinois offensively, Luke Altmaier, a couple of mistakes. I didn't think he was horrible, honestly. It's just, I think Oregon's defense is really good, too. And I don't think this is the end of Illinois' season. I think they've still got a really good chance to win, I don't know, nine games. I mean, they're going to go Minnesota at home. That's winnable. We've talked about Minnesota. We like them, but that's winnable. Michigan State's winnable. At Rutgers is winnable. At Northwestern's winnable. I think in aggregate, they probably lose one, but I think 9-3 is totally out there. Oregon's just on another level. They're, you know, from a talent perspective, they're pretty close to Ohio State. They're not quite there, but they're pretty close. And from a coaching standpoint, they're, I would say, a cut above. They're the class of this league, and not just because they beat Ohio State, but because combination of talent and coaching, it's that's a tough combo to beat, especially on their home turf.
Yeah. This was not close. And we were like, oh, yeah, 21.5, Illinois, good defense. You know, they should be able to, like, keep this close. Maybe Dylan Gabriel, point shaving. No, none of that. Both teams ran 67 plays. Oregon, in those plays, got 527 yards of offense.
Okay. So Illinois must have been close, right?
Yeah, 293. No, it wasn't
close. Close to half.
Yeah, close to half. You know, it was like Illinois went for fourth down three different times and didn't get any of them. This was just it's the blitzkrieg thing, right? I mean, for Oregon to go score, you know, they did most of their damage in the first half. And then it was just like, it's 35-3. Okay, we could cruise the rest of the
way. And I looked at what Brett Bielema was saying after the game, and he wasn't wrong about anything. I think he's a good coach, but he kept talking about tackling and like they didn't tackle well. And yes, that's true. But also, if you're in a position where you have to make a ton of open field tackles on great playmakers, you're not in a good position.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to be making negative plays. You've got to be putting pressure on the quarterback so he's throwing incompletions. He wasn't throwing incompletions. They weren't making negative plays. And if you're don't doing that and you're just dependent on guys over and over doing repeatable tackles on excellent playmakers downfield, you're probably going to lose. You're probably going to have a bad defensive game, even if they make a lot of those tackles. So, yes, tackling was a problem. But also, I mean, if you're trying to tackle a guy 15 yards downfield, the game's already up.
Yeah. This was one of those things where, I mean, I think both teams turned the ball over once. There was, they had the same amount of drives. There wasn't any sort of craziness outside of like a normal, like, here's what football is. Both teams just played football, and one team was just way better at playing football than the other one.
Yeah, you know, Oregon's a legit national title contender, and Illinois is a team that's probably going to go 9-3 this year, legitimately. And they're not bad. They went into Penn State and played a competitive game. They went into Nebraska and beat them at home. Like, this is a good team. They went up against a great team.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got to do our mythical Pac-12 rankings, and we'll get to some questions. And if you're watching us live on YouTube, you have questions in the chat, put them in there, and we will get to them. All right. Back in a minute, everyone. That was a long, long recap.
Yeah, and I think it was just because there were a lot of interesting games.
There were a bunch. It was fun to watch. Let me see. Okay, so let's do, we'll go through quickly our mythical Pac-12 power rankings. At number 12.
Stanford Cardinal.
Yeah, Stanford continues to be shit. They lost at home to Wake Forest.
They do have one ACC win, but still they're pretty bad. You know another team that's pretty bad?
Oregon State Beavers.
This was a shutout until deep. Oh, go ahead.
Number 11, and they're playing our number 10 team.
California Golden Bears.
Maybe a little unfair on Cal. They've played a lot of close games. just lost a lot of them.
They keep losing.
Yeah, Cal won 44-7. It was a shutout until very, very late. Oregon State's in very bad shape.
Yeah, I don't know. We could move Cal up, I guess, but Oregon State's not good. Could Oregon State be below Stanford, do you think? Or
we'll see.
All right, we'll see. This is kind of a surprise. Number 9.
Utah Utes.
So bad.
Whew. Yeah, Utah lost to Houston. This one was kind of brutal. They were leading until the fourth quarter, then gave it up. Early on, looked like they might have found something offensively, but then it went away, dissipated entirely. They're 4-4, in danger of, you know, not being a good final record for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, they've lost 4 in a row. I think this team lost 5 in a row, but did beat Utah, so we have them here.
Arizona Wildcats.
Number 8.
Arizona, for my money, is the most, arguably the most disappointing team in college football this year. Considering what they retained from last year, considering the hype that they had coming out of last season, and even losing Jonah Coleman, even losing a head coach, you know, expectations were justifiably that this would be a bowl team and a contender in the Big 12, and they have been absolute garbage. They lose at home to a West Virginia team that was missing its starting quarterback. Brent Brennan has done a horrible job with this team. Offensively, they look just bankrupt of ideas. He was a bad coach at San Jose State. He was bad there. He had one good season during the COVID year, which everyone has chosen to treat as if it was a real season, but it was a bad season, and it didn't make any sense. A lot of the results didn't make any sense, and he has the worst season in San Jose State history to his name, and they hired him.
Wow.
He is now completely unraveling everything that Jed Fish built. If there was a way to get out of that contract, Arizona should be exploring it as much as they can, because he's horrible. He's a horrible coach.
I think they've lost 4 in a row because they beat Utah, whatever. Okay. We have number 7.
UCLA Bruins.
That seems crazy.
Well, who are you going to?
Yeah, no, I get it. The Pac-12 would have been very bad this year, by the way.
Oh, my God. From the best year last year to the worst this year. Number 6.
USC Trojans.
Fine.
Number 5.
Washington Huskies.
Fine.
Number 4.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
They run a bye.
Yeah. But they're like 5-2, right?
Yeah, they're fine.
Number 3. Sorry.
Washington State Cougars.
Washington State rolls on 29-26 over San Diego State on the road. They are 7-1.
Crazy.
Go Cougs.
Number 2.
Colorado Buffaloes.
The Buffs also roll on. Travis Hunter came back for like a full game for the first time in, I think, 3 weeks, and he was awesome. They won 34-23 over Cincinnati at home. They are 6-2. They are bowl eligible. That's a big step.
Yeah. I think Travis Hunter leads the Big 12, and I believe like it's either like receptions and touchdown catches, but also pass breakups.
Yeah,
like,
and Colorado leads the Big 12 in pass breakups as a team by, I think, a ton.
Yeah. He has like 7.
Yeah.
Okay. And then number 1, of course.
Oregon Ducks.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. Cool stuff. Let's see. I think we had one in the chat. Let me see if we had a question here. Yeah, and then we only have a few emails and stuff, so we don't have too much going on.
So let me get out of here at some point.
Let me put this in the chat one up for you from DBid. You should both touch on Oregon State, Washington State agreeing to play twice next season.
Yeah, they're going to play on, I think it's November 1st and November 29th, home and home. I love it. I think it's fun. I think they should be thinking about doing more and more fun stuff. I think they should have been thinking about that all along. But yeah, I don't hate home and homes in football. I think that's kind of a cool throwback to yesteryear when things like that happened every now and then. But yeah, I think it's a cool idea. I think it'll give everyone some, you know, bragging rights and all that kind of stuff. And with the state of play in college football, teams at the lower levels-ish, and I'm not meaning that in a denigrating way, but like, do stuff. Doesn't hurt. just do stuff that's fun. Do stuff that's interesting and see if it works and see if it generates some interest. Go from there. But yeah, I think it's cool.
El Gordo in the chat says, maybe this has been answered. Has Ryan and David gone to lunch yet?
Oh, shoot. We completely forgot.
Yeah.
I can do this week.
Okay, let's see. What day?
Thursday. Are we doing Thursday this week recording?
We could. Why don't we do Thursday? Yeah. You want to do lunch Thursday and then record at 1 or something?
Like, yeah, or vice versa. We could do morning show and then go to lunch afterwards.
Okay.
Whichever one, because I don't have practice.
It's on Wednesday. Oh, perfect. I leave Friday for Seattle. So
same for me with Lincoln.
You're going to Lincoln, Nebraska.
That's crazy.
That's great. Wait, who has the money? Do I have the money or do you have
the money?
You sure? I think it was you. I think you have the money.
Oh, wait, did we get?
I'm just kidding. I don't know. I don't remember.
I thought you got a Venmo from the guy.
I think I did.
Yeah.
I remember all of this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's.
Thanks for the reminder.
That's a great reminder. We can do that on Thursday. We'll do lunch and a show.
Yeah. Sound off in the chat on where we should go in Hermosa.
Yeah,
the chat
Redondo,
gets to pick.
Or Redondo.
Yeah, or Redondo, wherever the hell we are. Who knows where we are?
Yes.
Redondo.
Okay. Let's see. We have a text message.
All right.
This is Rich from Meridian, Idaho. I'm a pro subscriber, and I've been a listener since the beginning. I don't believe in censorship or encouraging anyone to alter their truth. Ryan from Boise can suck it. Keep it mediocre, boys. Go Bruins.
Thanks, Rich.
That seems a little harsh.
A little harsh to Ryan and Griffin. We like Ryan and Griffin.
Literally,
I think I've limited my curse words to one, and I think it was an S, not even an F-bomb.
Yeah, we haven't done – yeah.
Griffin is inspiring me to be a better person.
Yes. Yes. And he's winning.
Yes. All right. Next up, we have John and Brea, our friend, yes. Jeopardy. Dear Ryan and Dave, I was watching Jeopardy last week with my wife, and one of the categories in Double Jeopardy was about presidential quotes. Who is Grover Cleveland? Who is Woodrow Wilson? A Truman quote about a general. Who is MacArthur? Who is Ronald Reagan? A question about Lincoln's inaugural address. What is charity? I ran the category. My wife looked at me with a puzzled look. How did you know all of those? At first, I was like, I don't know. But then it hit me. I knew those answers because I've been listening to the podcast of champions. Sweet. Like my working knowledge of classical music being built on a foundation of watching endless Bugs Bunny cartoons, I owe all of my knowledge of past presidents in American political history to you. Mostly Dave. You basically Miyagi'd me. Funny, though, I don't really know much more about college football after all these years.
Fair.
Anyway, thanks for the knowledge, and who knows, someday on Jeopardy, I'll take Disney princesses for $200. Peace, John and Brea.
Sweet.
John and Brea writes the best emails.
He's great.
It's so fun.
We have some awesome listeners. And he sends us like gift cards for Trader Joe's. This is very quick. This is a quick text message from someone that hasn't sent us a text message, didn't leave a name, didn't say what is this was in context with or anything. He is absolutely point shaved.
My favorite thing is like the occasional Oregon fan who will get on my Twitter and be like, I'm kind of seeing your point now. I'm kind of seeing it. Because it's so funny. And like, obviously, he's just a quarterback who occasionally makes the occasional mistake. But it's like, he's so accurate, so accurate, so accurate. And then what was that?
Yeah. Point shaving.
It's amazing.
There wasn't really much in this game, right?
No, not too much. But like, I don't know what the first and second half lines were. What was the second half line?
Oh, he could have been.
It was 35-3, and then it ended, 38-9?
Yeah.
What was the second half line?
He was under 70%, 18 of 26.
Yeah.
He threw that pick, but he still averaged 11.2 yards per attempt there.
So, I mean,
I don't think he was point shaving this one. But maybe there were some lines we weren't – maybe it was getting a little too obvious, so he's going to do like second half. Yeah, the second half after scoring 35 points – In the first half, only putting up three in the whole second half. So maybe he was doing the second half under. Maybe it was whatever, Oregon minus whatever in the second half. They got outscored in the second half. So, yeah, it's a little point shaving going on still.
Yep.
But that was a great text, literally from someone. We haven't got a text before. I believe it was the first time, right? Yes. So this is the first text we ever got from this account. We didn't know, no name, nothing else. Just he is absolutely point shaving. That's the text. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. We have a question in the chat about Roman emperors.
Oh, let me see. Who's it from?
It's from Max Alona G.
Oh, okay. Let me put it up here. Hold on. Okay. David, between Nero, Caligula, and Commodus, rank the worst Roman emperors.
Of those three, I would have to go with Commodus. I mean, he basically took Rome from its height and pretty much tanked the thing. Nero was bad. Caligula was bad. You know, I think Nero started a big civil war. But I think it's Commodus among those three.
Okay.
I think if you're going from like basically the height of Rome to, you know, degradation and decay in, you know, a single person's run of office, that's got to be the winner there. But I think there's others. I mean, Honorius could be in there. You know, there's some other options, but yeah, Commodus among those three.
He had this question earlier, but I think he left out Nero. He added Nero to this part. In the early part, I think he just said, yeah, I don't think he had Nero in the first one, but
yeah, I think you're having, I think, the right conversation. I think it's probably Commodus. So.
Good stuff. Hey, so on Jeopardy, you know, which is the worst Roman emperor?
They're not going to ask a subjective question. Come
According to David Woods on the Podcast of Champions. All right. Well, I think we're good.
All right. We are done.
Yeah. How do you want to, like, do a screenshot for this
one? I don't care. You pick this time.
I don't know.
I did princess poses last time.
You did?
Yeah.
Anything in the chat? You do this? Okay. Like the show of hands? Okay. All right. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for joining us. If you're watching live, if you're listening some other time, maybe it's like 2087 and you're listening to the Podcast of Champions because you want to know what happened back in 2024, week 9 of Big Ten football. And if you are...
No, it's my kids. When I die an untimely death at like 39, they are watching this just to try to remember their father.
Oh, it could be that. Hi, kids.
25 years from now. Hi, guys. Berkeley, hope you're doing well.
Berkeley, hello. Okay. Yeah, but that's good.
Yep.
It's like a little homage to your...
Yeah.
This
is posterity right here.
You're not in your 40s yet?
No.
Damn.
I'm 38 years old.
Jeez.
I'll be 39 on November 19th.
Oh, what are we going to do for your birthday?
I don't know.
Should we dress up on Thursday?
I'm not going to. You can.
Okay. We'll see. Yeah. Well, we're going to do lunch. We didn't really get any suggestions, so I'll pick
something. Halloween lunch.
Halloween lunch, and then we'll do the show, which should be fun. Okay. Well, that's going to wrap it up. We already said goodbye.
Let's say goodbye again.
Okay. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Good.